This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
At his court appearance, it came out that police had received a tip-off that the group was intending to launch their attacks, which were aimed at black people.
That's Tuso Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up. Also, Aid Group Relief International says armed men attacked its compound in South Sudan. The new president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, will be visiting Ethiopia on Friday. And the Nigerian community in South Africa has launched a social cohesion program to unite Nigerians. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Violence in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is hampering efforts to halt the spread of the Ebola virus, which has killed 2,200 people since August 2018. International organizations warned on Friday of a potential resurgence of the virus after deadly militia attacks on health centers forced aid groups to suspend operations and withdraw staff from the epidemic's last strongholds. The recent deadly violence flared in and around the town of Beni. I first asked our reporter in Kinshasa, Anastasi Tudishi, to describe the latest situation in Beni, which has been the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak.
Well, today, the city of 200,000 people is very quiet. Shops are closed, traffic is scarce after a week of turmoil. A civil society organization has called for 2 days off to protest against recent attacks.
What happened?
Well, last Monday, protesters have torched down a UN military base and set ablaze the town hall. The population is furious that both UN 18,000 people strong force and the government troops alike have failed to prevent an attack by the ADF, a Ugandan militia. Last week, the threshold of 100 victims in a month was reached after recent attacks. I have to add that the town has also been at the epicenter of an Ebola outbreak, with health services disrupted because of years of instability.
So what has been the political response so far?
Well, so far, dear Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has promised that the UN and the government troops would conduct joint operations to protect civilians in Beni.
And who are these militias? Could you describe who they are for us, please?
Well, the ADF are a Ugandan militia. They say that they are Muslim, and they come from Uganda, and their modus operandi now is that they buy Congolese military outfits to blend in the population and attack. They are believed to have, they are accused of widespread atrocities, and they are accused of doing so for years now. But their motives are not, still unclear, but, the region, the eastern part and Beni, is a mineral rich area. That could be one motive. As for the others, they are pretty silent about what they want and need.
That was our reporter in Kinshasa, Anastasi Tudishi, on the latest violence in Beni in the eastern DRC. Four members of a suspected terrorist group appeared at the Middelburg Magistrates Court in South Africa today. Police say the arrests of the four, which started by the detention of the group's leader, come after 2 years of extensive surveillance on the group's activities, which were aimed at destabilizing the country. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The magistrate ordered the four accused held in custody until their next court appearance in January. Harry Johannes Nussen, the leader of the National Christian Resistance Movement, NCRM, was arrested on Thursday. His alleged accomplice, Rihanna Haymans, immediately went into hiding, but over the weekend, police arrested her together with brothers Eric and Errol, who were housing her. Hangwani Mulaudzi is the spokesperson for the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigation, HOCS. He said the group, which members also call the Crusaders, was planning acts of terrorism.
We have managed to uncover a lot of information based on allegations that they wanted to create havoc in the country. This organization is spread all over the 9 provinces of this beautiful country of South Africa. This is a formation that is perpetuating issues of hatred, issues of racism.
He said the group could have hundreds of members.
They wanted to create havoc by planting bombs in shopping malls, informal settlements. There were claims that they wanted to also take over army bases as well as some police stations. Critical is that they also have the courage, you know, of asking donations from various people for them to be able to go ahead with their plan.
After searching one of Nusen's properties, police discovered a possible explosives factory, electronic devices, documents, an unlicensed firearm and ammunition. They found similar items when the other three were arrested. Nusen is a retired pastor and a former member of the South African National Defense Force. At his court appearance, it came out that police had received a tip-off that the group was intending to launch the attacks, which were aimed at black people. Nusen is an admitted racist. For years, he has called on white South Africans to wage a war against blacks. Zenzo Moyo is a political analyst at the University of Johannesburg. He says it's too soon to tell the level of threat the group poses to national security.
At the moment, it may not be possible to tell whether these are really terrorists or not. Investigations are still going on, but it would seem as if these are people that still harbor their narrow nationalism, which was prevalent in South Africa. So these are nationalists, narrow nationalists that are still in South Africa at the moment.
Other analysts say South Africans have no reason to be very worried, saying the group has no capacity to commit acts of terrorism. Some describe the case as an isolated incident, and similar ones may pop up once in a while in a country like South Africa. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Nigerian community in South Africa has launched a social cohesion program to unite Nigerians with South Africans and other Africans in the country. The community says it will help people foster closer ties and learn different cultures. Mike Mbonye reports from Pretoria.
Adetolo Olubajo is the president of the Nigerian Union in South Africa, the umbrella body of Nigerians expatriates. He says the social cohesion program will help Nigerians integrate with South Africans in their communities.
The major aim of our social cohesion program is to build bridges, because one of the things that we notice over time is that when migrants move to South Africa, Nigeria in particular, they live in isolation. They don't integrate into the community. Most times we Nigerians come to South Africa and we don't want to behave like a South African. We need to understand that they have their culture, they have their understanding.
Olubajo says the union will work with other organizations to implement the social cohesion program. He says the union worked with a carnival company on South Africa's Heritage Day in September to exchange ideas and culture.
How do we want to pilot this project? How have we been piloting this project? It's through collaboration with African Diaspora Forum, organizations like Africa Diaspora Forum, Lawyers for Human Rights, the Sonke Justice Group, quite a number of them in different provinces where we come together with them and say, okay, let's work together. For example, now, in the Heritage Day, we work with the government there, the Carnival Company, to cross-exchange.
Vusi Sibanda is the chairperson of African Diaspora Forum, a Johannesburg human rights organization. He says the Nigerian community's social cohesion program is a step in the right direction.
Now, the question of the social cohesion that, you know, is being initiated by the Nigerian Union in South Africa, it's a very welcome, you know, project in the sense that the majority of the problems that we have in South Africa are merely caused by lack of understanding and by politicians taking opportunistic hits at migrants, using their failures, in fact, covering up for their failures by pointing out that, you know, migrants are committing crimes and migrants, you know, are taking away their jobs and houses. But the truth of the matter is, when you look at the ground, you will realize that there are a lot of intermarriages between, you know, migrants and South Africans.
Olubajo with the Nigeria Union says the group has started launching the program in other South African provinces. He says members intend to reach the provinces before the second quarter of next year. This is Mike Imbonye for VOA News in Pretoria.
The new president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, announced yesterday that she would leave for the capital of Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, on Friday. This will be her first official trip outside the EU. She will go to Addis Ababa on Friday to meet African Union representative Moussa Faki, Nobel Peace Prize winner Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, and Ethiopian President Sahle Work Zewde, the only woman at the head of an African country. Von der Leyen took up her new position as president of the European Commission on Sunday, a month later than originally planned. She got straight to work with a series of telephone calls to heads of G7 and G20 member countries. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. After a week of turmoil, the city of Beni in the eastern DRC is calm. Aid Group Relief International says armed men attacked its compound in South Sudan. The Nigerian community in South Africa has launched a social cohesion program to unite Nigerians with South Africans. And the new president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, announced that she would visit Ethiopia on Friday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Aid Group Relief International says armed men attacked its compound in South Sudan and assaulted several staffers. The organization condemned the attack, which took place in Maban town in Upper Nile State. It has relocated its staff from the compound. It's not clear who carried out Sunday's attack. South Sudan is one of the world's most dangerous places for aid workers, and more than 100 have died there since civil war broke out in 2013. The war had displaced millions and resulted in nearly 500,000 deaths. A peace deal to end the conflict has been signed but not fully implemented. The U.S. State Department said U.S. officials recently met with the Libyan National Army Commander Khalifa Haftar as Washington presses him to end his offensive on the capital. The diplomats discussed steps to achieve a suspension of hostilities and a political resolution to the Libyan conflict. Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute and the founder of Libya Analysis, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi about the new U.S. engagement on Libya. He starts by discussing the U.S. response to the involvement of Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and most recently, Russian mercenaries in Libya. The U.S. has expressed serious concern, in particular, over Russia's role in the conflict.
Well, we've seen something fascinating of late, which is that the U.S. is reluctant to engage in Libya. But when a report came out in the New York Times of Russian mercenaries in Libya using a special kind of bullet, that caused congressmen and the State Department to act swiftly to show that they would not stand idly by as the Russians doubled down and tried to do what they've done in Syria in terms of tipping the conflict. So what the U.S. can do constructively is probably just to try to keep other external actors out. A Libyan-Libyan process is needed to reach a real and lasting resolution, particularly on the economic angle of things. But the U.S. role could be as a convener and trying to use our international clout and leverage to force other international actors to not meddle militarily or financially in Libya. And you're right. The thing that we need to do immediately is to dissuade the Russians, Egyptians, and Emiratis from engaging in more interference on the Haftar side.
The State Department talked earlier with officials from the Tripoli-based government and said these frank discussions aim to establish a common basis for progress between the parties on the issues that divide them in the context of moving toward a ceasefire. What should the U.S. do differently to get Libya out of chaos and instability?
Well, I wish there was a magic bullet. I think that just working on the political or military tracks has been proven to not work, and that the U.S. has an ability to work on the economic track to try to unify the Libyan central bank from the east and the west, to unify the eastern and western NOC, which is the oil company, and that trying to force the Libyans and help the Libyans to cut subsidies and deal with fraud and corruption, this can eliminate some of the underlying drivers of conflict. So mediation on the one hand, forcing other international actors to not intervene in the conflict as a second thing, and then trying to lend technical expertise and convening power for something like an economic or financial commission. This is what we can do.
That was Jason Pack with the Middle East Institute and Libya Analysis. He spoke with my colleague, Mohammed El-Shenawi. Also in Libya, the Government of National Accord, GNA, today said at least 4 children died and several people were wounded in overnight airstrikes in a suburb of the capital. GNA spokesman Amin Al-Hashemi reported major damage after the strikes on Al-Sawani, about 25 kilometers south of central Tripoli. He said there was no military infrastructure in the area. It was not immediately clear who carried out the airstrikes. The GNA blamed Emirati drones backing the Libyan National Army, led by General Khalifa Haftar. That could not be confirmed, and Haftar's forces had no comment. Nigerian prison officials say an electric power accident in the Ikoyi prison in Lagos today killed and injured several inmates. The Ministry of Interior has ordered an immediate investigation into the incident in which at least 5 prisoners died. Nigerian news media say some of the victims were electrocuted and several of the injured prisoners are fighting for their lives. Ikoyi Prison is one of the oldest and largest correctional facilities in the country, holding thousands of inmates. More than a dozen people, including government forces, were killed during deadly clashes in South Sudan's Tonj State over the weekend. Tonj State's information minister says authorities are investigating the matter and will track down the gunmen. Viola Elias has the story from Juba.
Tonj State Minister of Information William Wall says the incident happened on Saturday morning in Yorbokam when the armed patrolists opened fire on government forces who were dispatched to the area to disarm civilians. Wall says state authorities sent in security forces to prevent violence from spreading to other counties in the state.
The arrangement of searching for the culprits and to find out what was the root cause of the clashes are later to be announced, but so far the government is trying to de-escalate further clashes that may protect lives of both civilians and the government forces. And in fact, when the problem is reduced, the criminals shall be apprehended as soon as possible and they will be taken to court for rule of law.
Wall says the state authorities are investigating the matter. He says 9 soldiers and armed patrolees were injured in the clashes. This is the 3rd time government forces have clashed with armed civilians since the state launched its disarmament program in Tonj last year, according to Wall. He says the state goal is to disarm all armed civilians to reduce insecurity.
And our target is to disarm.
Our target is to disarm the civil population. The illegal arms are causing insecurity both internally and externally. So this was the only purpose Tony State government meant to bring peace to the community of Tony. And of course, it has been misunderstood by our civilians because they see into it that they want to protect themselves from any aggression.
South Sudan Forces military spokesperson Major General Lul Rai Kong confirmed several government soldiers died in the clashes. He says armed civilians who refused to give up their weapons have clashed on several previous occasions with government disarmament forces in Tony State.
Our soldiers are facing a lot of difficulties in the disarmament exercises, but we want to ensure that civilians don't continue killing themselves, and the only way to stop killing the innocent is by removing these illegal guns that they are still holding.
Chapter 2 of South Sudan Revitalized Peace Agreement stipulates that the government must train police, military and other bodies to carry out disarmament and demobilization exercise during the transitional period. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Burkina Faso security forces today are searching for the attackers who killed 14 people in an attack on a Protestant church in the country's east yesterday. On Twitter, President Roch Marc Christian Kabore condemned what he called the barbaric attack in the town of Hantukura. He said several people also were wounded. Islamic extremists have been active in Burkina Faso since 2015. Some militants have attacked police stations and churches across the north, but recently have struck in the east. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the International Day for the Disabled Persons is commemorated on December 3rd. Disability on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello Africa, this is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.